This Be Podcast Network show is presented by IXL. Loved and trusted by more than 1 million teachers, IXL enhances your teaching and takes work off your plate, so you can make an even bigger impact on your students. IXL delivers personalized learning across a comprehensive pre-K through 12th grade curriculum, including math, language arts, science, and social studies, and helps you assess student performance through actionable real-time insights. Strengthen daily instruction, close knowledge gaps quickly, and set every student up for success. If you want to bring IXL to your school, you can learn more at IXL.com/BE. That's IXL.com/BE. We're proud to be sponsored by MyFlex Learning. MyFlex Learning is a scheduling platform that helps middle and high schools meet the individual needs of all students. Schools can easily create and manage time for flex blocks, activity periods, RTI, therapy, and teacher appointments, and much more. With its built-in accountability tool and reporting features, MyFlex Learning solves your challenges around getting kids where they need to be and understanding how flex time is spent. Make your flex time work for you. Visit myflexlearning.com/BE to learn more and receive $500 off the first year. That's myflexlearning.com/BE. This is Dr. Karen, and you are listening to the De Facto Leaders Podcast on the Be Podcast Network, where I share up-to-date, evidence-based practices, my own experiences, and guest interviews designed to help pediatric therapists, educators, and aspiring school leaders design services that support social, emotional, and academic growth and set kids up for success in adulthood. Whether you want to learn effective strategies for your therapy session or classroom, be an influential leader on your team, or find creative ways to use your skills to advance in your career, I've got you covered. Hey there, it's Dr. Karen, and welcome to episode 151 of the De Facto Leaders Podcast. If we try to make schools in the U.S. more like schools in other countries, will that result in more effective practices and outcomes after the K-12 years? Why do policies work in some districts but not others? There are many ideas that sound good on paper, but the people working with students or leading schools are often telling a different story. And that's why I invited reading specialist Jalita Johnson to episode 151 to share her expertise on these topics. Jalita is a reading specialist in the Northern Virginia area. She is a veteran, wife, and mom of four. She completed her undergrad in North Carolina. She holds a master's degree in elementary reading and is currently enrolled in a doctoral bridge program at George Mason University for Educational Leadership. Over the years, she has come to realize that she's committed to being a lead learner. And because Jalita has had the opportunity to live so many different places as a military veteran, she brings a really unique perspective to education reform and professional development. And that's why I thought she would be an amazing guest to talk about how we can better support teachers when it comes to literacy reform, as well as just education as a whole. In this conversation, she shares her ideas on being an agent for change and why her military background gave her the skills and experience to lead reform initiatives in education, syntactic complexity and the disconnect between decoding and encoding and language comprehension, and why she sees syntactic complexity as a really important tool for bridging a lot of the curriculum areas together. We talk about professional development and learning communities, and answer the question of, does one size fit all when it comes to adult learning? And then we also talk about the challenges that come up when federal, state, or district level initiatives are modeled off of policies from other countries, states, or even neighboring districts. In this episode, I mention Language Therapy Advanced Foundations, my program that helps SLPs create a system for language therapy. I originally created this program to help SLPs with the supplemental language intervention that's designed to support a robust reading curriculum. However, recently I have had other professionals who are involved in literacy intervention be interested in the program. So while it definitely will work for you if you are an SLP, if you're involved in language intervention in some way, then you're definitely welcome to check out the program. You can learn more about Language Therapy Advanced Foundations at drkarenspeech.com/language therapy. And I also wanted to mention the School of Clinical Leadership, since we're talking about the topic of education reform. The School of Clinical Leadership helps related service providers guide their teams to support students' executive functioning across the day. This program will help you to plan direct therapy, but will also help you lead change management on your team, no matter your job title. So you can learn more about the School of Clinical Leadership at drkarendudekbrannon.com/clinical leadership. As you know, if you are a person who is working directly with students, there are many times when your colleagues need support from you, especially if you are a subject matter expert. So here is where you can lead initiatives similar to what Jalita is doing in her district, where she is taking her expertise in reading and syntax and sharing it with other people that she works with so that they can apply it to what they're teaching in their classrooms. Many times with both language and executive functioning, there are components that you can address in your direct intervention, but there comes a point when you do need to think about the overall programming and how you can be a leader on your team so that you can make changes to things that are happening outside of therapy. So I really talk about the leadership aspect in the School of Clinical Leadership. So again, Language Therapy Advanced Foundations really helps you to create a system and a protocol for your direct language intervention, which really sets the foundation for you to be a leader on your team, because it's very difficult for you to train other people in what you're doing if you're not clear in what you're doing. So that is the first step. You can learn more about that program at drkarenspeech.com/language therapy. And then when you're ready to expand the services that you provide, then I recommend checking out the School of Clinical Leadership, which adds the executive functioning component. You can learn about that program at drkarendudekbrannon.com/clinical leadership. Now, please enjoy this interview with Jalita Johnson. Today, I am joined by Jalita Johnson, a reading specialist from Virginia. So thank you so much for being here with me today.
Thank you for having me.
Well, let's start off by having you share a little bit about yourself, your background, and what you're doing now.
I am Jalita Johnson. As you stated, I'm currently a reading specialist, but just a little background up to my point here in life. I joined the military my junior year of high school, and I stayed in 8 years. I married my husband, and we are right at the 10-year mark. So I have been a military spouse a little bit longer than I was actually enlisted. But while I was trying to, you know, serve my contract time with the military and complete my degree, I was always finding myself having to transfer universities during the PCS season. And those universities did not accept the internship hours. And so I found myself accumulating over 1,000 classroom hours in the gen ed setting across 3 states, particularly in grades K and 2.
Okay.
And so once I actually got my teaching certificate, I began teaching in St. Louis, Missouri. And I was gung-ho for math. Math was my thing. I love patterns. I love finding the aha moments in math. And it was a no-brainer to help students facilitate that same, you know, meaning making and connections with math. And then I got introduced to my wonderful mentor, Erica Garcia Niles. She's a principal now, but she told me do not count out being a reading specialist. And that was when reading got on my radar, and I got my master's from Grand Canyon University in Arizona. And it was like an eye-opening experience to see how similar reading and math could be, especially with the idea in education that math is always easier to learn and teach, or it's always more black and white to learn and teach compared to reading. And so with math being my background, I was determined to figure out what connections can I help teachers make to see that the same structures, routines, ideas for facilitation, and engagement opportunities provided to students could be similar with math and with reading. And I initially started my work trying to figure out what is the math equivalent, so the reading equivalent to number sense in math. And I just thought it was phonics, especially with everything coming out with the science of reading. My undergrad degree, we were learning that like back in 2015, but it wasn't called the science of reading. And so I was always knowing what that looked like. Those 1,000 hours, that was all science of reading, but it wasn't called that, right? And so I thought the equivalent was going to be phonics, but now I've unearthed the idea that syntax is the reading equivalent to number sense in math. And that has been where I have locked my focus in at this point, to help teachers be able to find that one big thing that they can focus on in instruction. So no matter, you know, what genre you're working in, no matter what skill you're working on, because education can be a little hard for teachers because they have to balance what is best for their students in that moment in all of those grades. So helping them to, you know, figure out that what could I, you know, refine my practice on? What can I build my background knowledge on so that I can be a better practitioner for my students? And so fast forward, and that's where I am right now in my, it's a leadership program through Stafford County in conjunction with George Mason University. And I just realized that they were like ranked number 15 in the country. Mm-hmm. So I'm proud to say that now. And I'm going to actually use this program as a bridge to my doctoral studies. And so that's where I found you with my research in building syntactic complexity across our grade levels.
I love that. I have so many questions and things I could many directions I could go with all of what you just said, but I love the idea of there being a parallel between reading and math. And I actually have gone the other direction. I definitely have not gone as far into math as you have gone into reading with the way that you've shifted. But when I think about things like executive functioning and time perception and understanding of quantity and how that applies to vocabulary, I definitely see a lot of transfer there. But yeah, that makes so much sense how you said, well, it seems like the parallel between reading and math would be phonics, which maybe to some extent it could be, because you want to have automaticity so that you can have the bandwidth for those higher level concepts. But yeah, I love
the
that.
Meaning making doesn't happen until you reach that sentence level. And that's exactly what piqued my interest to go down that rabbit hole, because we had to do like a deep dive in the data. And I think that's also an upside to being in the military and being able to, you know, draw on my background understanding for the different environments that I've been in. And so being able to deep dive in the data and see that third grade in Virginia, because the state of Virginia has a mandatory screening for all kids K through three, which I love, for reading. And it pings if you have any of those phonological or phonographic processor gaps, and it pings you as needing 30 minutes of intervention every day for 5 days a week for the entire school year. And it guarantees that intervention service to those students. But I saw that every year from kindergarten to third grade, I followed three cohorts. Every year in those cohorts, they outperform the district and the state benchmark for that phonics and the phonography processor through PALS, the screener. But that's the same cohort in the same year that outscored the district and the state fell significantly in regards to the SOL state test. And I was like, how do they have, when we think about the simple view of reading and understanding the science of reading, how do they have one side of the equation and not have the other? Like, what is that? I know it's overly simplified with that multiplication equation, but what is that bridge? And I initially thought it was fluency, and I realized, making meaning, fluency helps it, but it's not, that is not the end goal. So I kept digging, and then I hit the syntactic complexity.
Yeah. So let me, just to make sure that I'm understanding. So you had these students and were thinking, you know, a lot of times it's, well, they need to have that automaticity at the word level with being able to decode words, which obviously is part of the equation, but you're saying that they still weren't improving on their comprehension. And you found that the syntactic complexity was the thing that was missing in a lot of these students. Is that correct?
Absolutely.
Okay. I love that. Because again, it's not that we're saying that the word decoding isn't a factor. It's great that we got that part addressed, but it's more than that. That's, I feel like I'm saying that all the time, especially with, you know, when I'm thinking about speech pathologists, and this, I think this applies to other professionals as well. Reading specialists, general education teachers, special ed teachers, really anybody who's addressing the language and literacy, we have to figure out how we all work together and fill in those missing pieces. So I always, a lot of times I'm saying, if you are a person who is addressing language and that syntactic piece isn't intact, that's an area where you can make a huge difference, because a lot of times that is one of those missing pieces. And, you know, and it's great if the teachers are working on helping kids improve their reading at the word level, but we also need to help them understand how to put the sentences together. Otherwise, that high level comprehension is going to break down. So I love that you're seeing that as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I will always say she's one of the best partners that I've ever worked with, Carrie Franks. She's in the classroom now. She's a third grade teacher in the same district. But she asked me, she was like, you know, what are your convictions? And in doing this work over the past 13, 14 months, I've come to realize that one of my longstanding convictions is always going to be taking care of the teacher. And so when we talk about like these big concepts of do we focus on phonics? Do we focus on vocabulary? Do we focus on fluency? You have teachers in the middle of the policymakers and the district leadership on that pendulum swing, and they so desperately need and want balance. Like, help me to understand, what can I do for my students now? And I think that's where the reading wars come in, because teachers put so much time and effort in trying to figure it out to be the best practitioner they can be. And then somebody comes in with this new bright idea. It's like, nope, this is the best thing to do. And then we put all our eggs in that basket. And so I'm just trying to keep that, you know, in the forefront of things. Like, this is not one of those, you know, ideas where you pendulum swing in the way of syntax. Nope. Phonics is still important. Fluency is still important. All of those factors still need to exist, but the rate in which we start to introduce syntactic awareness to students can be that one little small change that makes the world of difference.
Yeah, I love that too, because a lot of the people that might be listening, if they are in a role where they are supporting the teachers, a lot of times the question is, how do I help the other people? Like, I'm in this therapy session or this reading session with my student, and now I'm sending them off to the school day, and you know, and they're going to be in a classroom, or maybe I'm sending them home to their parents, and the teacher and the parents want to know, what else can I be doing to build those language skills? So I think with grammar and syntax, even the people who are the language experts, that can even be overwhelming for them to know, where do I focus so that I can make a difference? What are those, high utility skills that are going to transfer over to other things. And I think that's an area where it can be a nice bridge. So I had another thought, but go ahead. I know you were going to say
I was just
something.
going to say you're right. You're spot on. One of my high school colleagues, she's a speech language therapist now. She was in the public education sector, but now she's running her own business, Explore to Express. Pediatric speech therapy. And so she really helped me to unlock the idea that it's not just the gen ed classroom setting side. Like it can't not we cannot just try to help teachers, try to grow teachers. Parents are that integral part. And so she spends a lot of her work focusing on parent therapy. And I found such a connection in seeing her work through social media because when parents, especially during the COVID learning era, they're like, I need my student needs a tutor, they fell behind. And it's like, nope, I do not prof like I can collect the paycheck for being a tutor, but the biggest influence that a student will have is their authentic interactions with you at home and in their natural environment. And that was one of the things that helped me to unlock, is it cannot just be our, 6 to 8 hours with students, with teachers. It has to be, influencing in some capacity what they experience when they leave us, so that the work that we do start at school can continue even at home over the summers, because that's really when we see a decline or a slip. And it's not at any like we don't blame teachers, we can't blame parents because they don't know what they don't know.
I love that. And I agree completely. I am always saying to the people who are in that interventionist role, so if you're in a school, one of the things that you really want to think about doing is, of course, make sure that you are have good skills when you're working directly with students, but also think about the ways you can collaborate with your team. But then also, if you are in a position where you're providing therapy, that parent coaching aspect is so important. And yes, it does just logistically tend to be a little bit easier for people who are in an outpatient setup or a private practice, because they do, the parent is bringing the child to their session. So it is a little bit easier for them to have access to the parents. But yeah, that parent coaching is so important. Parents just need the right information. And I know that during the pandemic, all kinds of, families knew that their kids were getting way more screen time than they should because everyone was overwhelmed. So definitely not shaming parents at all here, but yes, they need that coaching so they know how to structure the home environment. I know that there are a lot of different thoughts about what should be done outside of school, both during the school year as well as over the summer, to support what's going on in school. So what do you see as things that we can help parents to start doing at home, both over the summer and after school?
If I had to say two things that parents or caregivers could, promote, it would be dialogic conversation. So if you have a kiddo who says, apples eat, you repeat, you would like to eat apples. And then eventually they're going to start picking up on the oral syntax, which will help in the long run when we talk about reading comprehension at the sentence level. And then the other piece I would definitely suggest is vocabulary. Expand their understanding, because I did a quick research paper a few months ago where basically when we talk about the discrepancy or the gap with students from low to high socioeconomic background, it's always because of that vocabulary and the amount of words that they're exposed to. And it comes through experiences. And every kid doesn't have the same experience. But if you maximize on the experiences that you do have, as they begin to get older and start making sense of the world around them, they can start drawing and making connections to, if I, play football, or if I play rec league soccer, well, what is recreation? What's the difference between the recreation center and something that I'm doing for recreation? Like having those, very minute yet impactful conversations help to bring that vocabulary and that word and letter box to life for students, even before school, before they become kindergartners, or after school on the weekends and, you know, through breaks. Like it's something so small, but you will get a lot of bang for your buck if you invest in dialogic conversations and vocabulary.
Yeah, I love that, because I think that it's easy to just, you know, like it can be overwhelming to figure out how to change your daily habits. And I think that that's one area where people who do have that expertise and how to have those conversations that can be just embedded into the day, like you're driving somewhere or you're getting ready, and you can just change the way that you have conversations and engage with and use different kinds of language, as opposed to feeling like you need a worksheet or something like that. I think that a lot of times people will ask, well, what activities do you have for home? And their head goes to, you know, some kind of a worksheet or homework, or even something like, you know, people will ask, what app do you have to build language skills? And I'm like, well, you don't need an app. You can just change the way that you engage in your daily activities and then add some time when you're reading with your kids and then pull it into that as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So on that topic, I know that, so we have the conversation of, you know, looking at syntactic complexity and how impactful it is and how it's really important to be embedding that across the day. But some other things that you have experienced, just because you have had the opportunity to move around a lot and see how things are being implemented from one place to another. And I could even think of how what we just talked about, parent coaching, and how the demographics of your community would change the way that you impact with parents. You know, do you have a community where there's a lot of parents investing in tutors? Do you have, you know, some kind of a different setup, something like that? Or even just when you implement a policy in the school, how the size of the district, what the setup is in the administrators and the community, and just all kinds of things, the policies in the states, like all of that is so different. So what has been your experience there? I'd love to just see what your thoughts are.
I think initially, as a classroom teacher coming from the district that I was in, it was like one of the top three districts in the state of Missouri. And okay. My first year teaching was in a district, urban district that lost its accreditation. And I was recruited to join the district that I joined, and my initial response was, no, the kids need me where I am, you know, because it would have been like an easy out almost. And I felt a lot of guilt in changing settings, but what I realized is the system has to be primed and ready for change in order for it to happen. And so what I realized in making my decisions and, you know, making sure that I'm spiritually connected to that choice and decision, but it was that the system that I was in originally was not ready. They did not see the need for the change. And it's always going to be reactive when I notice, okay, well, what made that district different than this district in the same state? What made those two districts different than these two districts less than, you know, 20 minutes apart in the same state? And it's all about the way in which the system is perceiving the root cause. And that is one of the biggest eye openers that I've had, even in this George Mason Ed Leadership Program. It's the idea that a system has to view the end user as the teacher, not the student, because what we'll see is a lot of purchasing and implementations of resources and programs and ideas for the student's sake, but not build the capacity of the true end user, which is the teacher or the educator. And so having that be the focus in Missouri, even in the district that lost its accreditation, we were able to have a budget every year to go and receive PD at different conferences. They would pay for, you know, travel and lodging, and allow us to come back and share what we've learned. So they created that space in those two districts in Missouri that I don't quite see just yet in Virginia, or at least the two districts that I've been in. Mm-hmm. And I think that, even though it seems small, but I think that was probably one of the biggest shifts that I had to notice, because right now we only have one PD day in the entire school year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where in Missouri, it was a part of our monthly schedule. Every school in the district had PD day where every student was able to leave at 12, and teachers had that continuous. And I don't want to say we can't do it here, but being, like I said, being in that leadership course, I can think as a leader and not just a teacher. And I realized that the districts that I was a part of in Missouri were a fraction of the amount of students and teachers and resources that they have to logistically move around to make that even remotely possible here in Virginia.
I wanted to take a quick break here and talk about Language Therapy Advanced Foundations. Language Therapy Advanced Foundations is my program that helps SLPs and other professionals working on language to create a system for language therapy. In this conversation, we're talking a lot about the important components that need to be in place for kids to build their literacy skills, as well as advance in other academic areas so that they can expand their options later on in life. So that's why it's really important that we have effective literacy intervention in place, as well as the other core content areas. And as we are discussing in this conversation, having strong language skills is so critical to making that happen. One of the topics that we've talked about is syntactic complexity and the sentence types that kids need in order to have those strong comprehension skills. Now, many kids catch on to these sentence types and build their syntax skills by exposure, and the standard curriculum is adequate for them. They're able to do well with the standard instruction, but for kids with language disorders or other disabilities that impact language, they need more explicit intervention, and that is when language therapy or other intervention is warranted. And we need to make sure that we're giving them the intensity that they need. And I show you how to create a system for doing that in Language Therapy Advanced Foundations. What this does for you is twofold. One, it helps you to get really clear on your direct interventions. And when you get clear on that piece, it makes it so much easier for you to figure out ways to coach other people. It's very difficult to coach other people if you're not sure what your own personal protocol is. So I help you create that protocol in Language Therapy Advanced Foundations using a framework that narrows things down so that you know that you're being evidence-based, but offers you the flexibility of being able to customize it to your caseload and your district. To learn more about the program, you can go to drkarenspeech.com/language therapy. Let's talk about flex time in schools. The potential benefits to our students make it worth exploring. More time for personalized learning. Increased choice and agency for students. Dedicated time for intervention. Overall, as school leaders, it gives us and our faculty more tools to increase academic achievement. But the implementation and management of flex time can be a challenge. Tricky logistics and a lack of clear accountability systems can prevent teachers from buying in and can hold us back from ensuring students make good use of their time. I'm pleased to share that MyFlex Learning provides a solution to these challenges and more. MyFlex Learning helps you create and manage flex time for any purpose. Want to see it for yourself? Visit myflexlearning.com/BE to learn more and receive $500 off the first year of use. That's myflexlearning.com/BE. Now, let's get back to the conversation.
That makes so much sense, because I can even think of times when people will ask if I can do a PD, and it's like, I have no idea if what I'm going to say is going to be something that the district can implement, because I don't really know what's going on there. And yes, you can have a conversation there and do your best. I never think that people going into a district doing PD should just say, oh, I'm not going to do it, because, you know, I mean, everybody is doing their best and sharing information. And I think that in that kind of a situation, if you maybe make an impact on one person who then maybe moves to another district and is able to get into a situation where they can use that information more effectively or whatever it is. But yeah, that is so important. So what you're saying, though, is that so in one district, there's the system that was in place that helped things to be more effective was regular PD as a habit, and then also the space to talk about it and have that community versus one PD day a year. So in theory, you could bring someone who's an amazing presenter in one situation versus another, and the actual implementation and impact could be totally different.
Absolutely. And thinking about it in another light is that the districts in Missouri, they had that system in place, but the system wasn't necessarily trying to change. Where here in Virginia, the system is desperately wanting to change and evolve, but the resources and the opportunity to make the change through professional development does not exist. I don't know. I haven't been at the district level, so I can't speak in absolute terms. But what I've noticed is that every principal so far has to make it a part of their own school improvement plan to do things like ongoing PD. And I think you had an episode earlier where you spoke to a Catholic school principal, I believe. Mm-hmm. Yep. And he was speaking about the way in which he reframed how teachers do PLCs. And that was one of the things that my principal was able to bring in John Antonetti. He's the author of Powerful Task Designs, engagement strategies for teachers. And what he was able to capitalize on was, we're not going to be able to bring you in to be this awesome speaker, but once. But how can we utilize the system that we have to bring learning alive for teachers? And he simply came one day, and for every planning period, so while the students were in specials, he walked around with every grade level into other classrooms and told them, you turn your back to the teacher and you notice how the students respond. How do they respond? And we came out into the hallway and we were able to dialogue about questioning and teacher wait time and students collaborating together. But that was all during the school day. And those walkthroughs only happened maybe 30 minutes at a time. But the principal was able to see the need in the system and notice that gap existed in terms of PD, but not rest on the idea. We only have one PD day, so we can't, make it work.
Yeah.
He was able to really figure out a way to facilitate that for teachers and embed it in our everyday. Because I think a lot of PDs like this districts in Missouri are one-off. So we'll pay for you to go. We'll pay for you to learn and come back and discuss, but we're not really trying to change. So we can't make it a part of our every day. Where I am right now, it's like, we got to figure out a way to make it a part of our every day. And so our teachers currently on a rolling basis, every 6 days, have an hour and a half of planning time on top of their daily 45 minute planning time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so that's amazing. Been a tremendous shift that I'm experiencing.
That is one of the biggest things that, when I do talk to people in the support provider position as well, where I say, they're like, I understand that I need to be working and collaborating with the teachers, but when am I going to do it? So, and again, it totally depends on how the setup is in your district. Like, for example, in Illinois, we have for SLPs, the caseload cap is 60, but some districts in my state say, well, you know what? We understand that the cap is 60, but we only want our SLPs to have 40 because we want them to be able to provide really good services, which is is very uncommon, but, and I know other districts where a part-time SLP could have 100 kids. So that whole system, again, you could take a really great trainer and give the teachers and the related service providers this amazing information, but then there's not the system to put it in place. Or even if you did do more off, like had PD days more often, it would still be an issue. And I love that the thought or the idea about learning being embedded for adult learners. We talk about that all the time for kids, where it's, you know, we understand that lecture and leave is not a good model for kids. So why are we doing it for the adults? I mean, it should be embedded into the learning as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I'm learning that. I'm only in my third year as a reading coach, but I'm realizing even in those protected extended day or normal PLCs, talking at teachers is never going to work if their reality does not exist for them to take that abstract idea that I'm sharing and I'm talking about and trying my hardest to explain, if they don't have anything to make it connect to. And I had a very big aha moment when I realized over 60% of the teachers that I'm working with now became teachers during the pandemic.
Oh, wow.
And I am on an uphill battle with slide decks or not having, you know, the traditional anchor charts on the wall for students to always refer to throughout the school year, or understanding that facilitation for engagement could simply be you know, giving them an open-ended task and just walking around the classroom. Yep. Like, those concepts are not there because their experience and their onboarding was virtual.
That is so interesting. I didn't think of that, that there are a lot of new teachers that came, that started, and that's what they learned. That's really interesting.
Yeah. So my coaching is like, you know, I may be speaking a different language right now at PLCs, but if you invite me in, I promise I can help you bring this to reality in your classrooms. And it's simple, because one of the pushbacks that I've seen with the shift from balanced literacy or the whole language, reading wars is that, I don't want to give up all of the hard work and time and effort that I put into my logistics or my stations and my ability to, you know, orchestrate this beautiful rotation. But I've shown them that the flip doesn't get rid of any of those things. It's just simply redirecting your attention to how you facilitate that 80% of your time with the, you know, students you have, and giving them choice, and not letting it be all small group. But that's so small yet impactful shift, it has to be seen first. And so going back to that PD, I am going into classroom, trying to make it a part of their everyday learning and teaching so that the PD is effective.
Yeah, I love that. And so this is really interesting, because there's just the bringing in the PD and those ideas from other places. But one of the other things that we do when we're trying to create a policy in a place that doesn't have a policy or that needs to change their policy is that, for example, at the state level, we might look at another state and look at the language that they used in the other state for our policy. But then you're bringing something that worked in another geographic region to a different state that has a completely different culture and climate and all of those different things. And as you said, sometimes even in one state, districts that are 20 minutes away from each other are completely different. And when you have that, those policies that come down and they're supposed to apply to all these areas, or we're borrowing ideas, then there's all these little nuances and things that need to be addressed. Or even when we look at what other countries are doing and we're saying, wow, this country's doing really well, we should be doing what they're doing. I don't know. I'm curious your thoughts on that and how we can navigate all that, or even just what you've seen where with the borrowed ideas and how we can't just take one thing from another and just plop it in.
Right. Yeah. I love to talk in analogies, and a lot of my teachers, it was like, you know, here's another analogy, but my brain is such a visual thing that I have to make it connect, right? So when you take a fish and you take it from the store to your home, like they tell you to keep it in the bag in the environment that it's in and let it, you know, come into contact with that new environment through the plastic so that they can, you know, adjust whatever they need, their fish bodies need to do to adjust, right? So when you think of these educational initiatives and plans and policies, you don't give your system any ability to adjust to this new idea before you just plop it in there. And then you're surprised when the system rejects it. Like, this is a great idea that worked in this place, and they had all of these, you know, great, you know, statistics. Why can't you just do it here? Because the system is not ready to receive it. You can't buy a resource and say, if only you just teach this resource to fidelity, these scores will go up, right? You have to figure out what components of these ideas, of these policies and initiatives can fit my demographic. And that's where I think the danger comes in when we try to make teaching and learning non-autonomous. Like, you want everything to be lockstep. I've even heard, you know, door to door, floor to floor, everything needs to be the same. And that's never, ever going to be okay, because the idea of equity is giving students and teachers what they need to be successful. And that looks different at every school. So you have to imagine, to scale that up, how do you take an initiative that works somewhere else and bring it to your environment or your system and not consider the logistics that it would take to make it work? How do your parents, you know, involve with education? Because that's probably going to be one of the biggest factors when you see success. It's the stakeholders and the way in which they can collaborate and work together. And if we don't have that policy is not going to work for us.
Yeah, I see the parent engagement, because that is one thing that I would say, when you look from one district to another, is probably one of the things that is a factor that is different when you go from different communities. So if you have parents who are, you know, have a certain, you know, again, certain habits and level of engagement with the school in one community, and then it's different in another, and then you're putting a policy in and looking at test scores, then I would imagine that the ecosystem would be different when you compare those two things. And so you can't necessarily expect the results to be the same if the system looks different.
Absolutely. Or expect to, you know, bring, we just did something for the first time where every teacher in every grade across our district was able to have content academies at the beginning of the year during work week together. And even that collaboration showed such a vast difference in how they operate across their buildings, because what is imperative at my school is that we meet students and parents where they are, because of the demographics that feed into our school versus schools that do not have that as a priority or a need right now. And so what the district, in terms of systems change, is doing, or the rate in which they're doing it, are not going to serve our population. And so we can't and sit and try to figure out, okay, well, what is the state going to do in the shift to, you know, the science of reading, and how are we going to meet the new Virginia Literacy Act requirements? It's like, we have students, parents, and teachers looking to us for direction now. How do we take what we're learning now and make small shifts? And that's where, just full circle, that syntactic awareness, I feel like it's not going to depend on a PD. It's not going to depend on a district's purchase of a resource. It's all about bringing awareness to parents and practitioners, educators, to help them to see how the student brain evolves and how to help them make that connection within that simple view of reading.
Yeah, I love that, because even if you have a different amount of resources, and maybe one district can invest in this whole curriculum and set of tools and another one can't, then you could still use that concept and teach people those skills and that knowledge to pull in with whatever resources they have available. It almost sounds like, too, where I mean, we're not saying that we shouldn't invest in programs and resources and pay attention to what the research says, but in one community, you might need a good curriculum, and that could be the thing that's the missing link in that community. But then another one, you need good curriculum, but also you need to learn how to figure out how to get the community engaged and get the parents engaged. And so if you miss out on the parent engagement in that second community, then the curriculum is not going to have as much of an impact.
Absolutely. And I will also say, with the shifts, with any shifts, it's always going to be the inclination to buy this thing that could be the equity piece in terms of curriculum. But one of the things that I saw that was different, or one of the things that I actually experienced, because in me being an overly ambitious first year teacher, I signed up for the curriculum writing for math and reading in the district that lost its accreditation. And one of the requirements was that teachers had a part in creating the curriculum. They did not purchase a resource and call it their curriculum. They used the resource and put the pieces of the resources that helped to bridge the standard and the curriculum together with other resources. And that was what the curriculum was. Like, it was teacher created. It was organic buy-in, where what I'm experiencing now in Virginia is this is our curriculum, which is a program. And my biggest issue with that is that programs, no matter how much they're taught to fidelity, are not going to be the thing that teaches students. Teachers are. And so if you have a program that teachers are not aware of, that PD, you know, you can't have a one-off PD with this new resource and expect it to come to fruition in your data.
Yeah. I love that, because that's part of the thing. And I know that we've had conversations about how, you know, I've been, my start was tier three. And then I realized, wow, I need to be paying attention to all the tiers. I need to pay attention to tier one. And, you know, you mentioned that you were involved at the tier one level. And I just think that's really interesting, because I've said before to people who want a language therapy curriculum, for example, I can't give you a curriculum because there is nothing that I could possibly create for you that is going to fit the needs of all of your students. But I can give you a framework that gives you strategies that work on the vocabulary and the syntax that you can apply to what's going on at your district, so you can pull relevant vocabulary, so that you can use these ideas of what are the syntax, the syntactic skills that are going to be important and relevant, and then pull that in to the context in which, you know, that is relevant for your students. A lot of times people are like, what are the age appropriate vocabulary words at second grade? And I'm like, I can't even answer that. And it wouldn't even be useful for me to try. So just this idea of, we can be evidence-based by learning these foundational principles of the science of reading and understanding all these strands, and we can use the programs. We just have to know how to use the features the right way. So,
absolutely, especially when it comes to alignment. And I know from this leadership program that the majority of leaders, their job is to take all of these quote unquote research and research based best practices and figure out, how do we make sense of it all so that it can be given to teachers in a manner in which teachers are not having to, you know, figure out all of the different practices and then figure out how to bring it together. It's like, how do we do that? And one of the things that I've been trying to champion and communicate is that content alignment. So if we're teaching reading and this resource has us, you know, taking a deep dive in animal habitats, it does the teacher or the student no good if they have to shift gears in less than an hour and start talking about the American Revolution. Like, the content alignment is an integral piece in that ability for students to read and learn about the world around them in the context of that content and be able to write about it. And that syntax, being able to orally articulate your thoughts and your connections to that content through reading and writing, helps in the long run. Like that is essentially what we're wanting to do with reading instruction, help students to build the skills in which they can engage with the world around them and critically think about it and make connections and form their own thoughts and opinions. It's yeah. not this one-off, let me teach you how to infer. One-off, yeah. let me teach you how to ask and answer questions, you know?
Yep, that's a very, very common goal. And I don't think that it's bad to, you know, again, obviously, and being able to infer is important, but we have to know how to pull it in the right way. And I think the other thing too is that, you know, if you are a teacher, it makes sense that you should be focused on the curriculum, because that's, you know, it's almost presented like, well, that's your job. But I think just having the tools to make that energy that you focus on curricular alignment, pull in those things that are going to help the connection. It almost sounds like you see syntax as a way that teachers can do that, where they can focus on their content area, but they can make it relevant and not so siloed off.
Absolutely. Especially in the state of Virginia, they are considering integrating what they call it integrated reading and writing assessment within the reading SOL. So students in fifth grade would not just take a one-off reading assessment. They will have a reading assessment that includes nonfiction topics related to their social studies and science mm-hmm. content area with multiple choice questions and a written response in terms of how do you make sense of, for instance, if the paragraph is about the Amazon rainforest, you know, it's going to probably ask like, what was the main idea of paragraph two? Or, mm-hmm. you know, what could this italicized word mean? What could be a synonym for it? But then at the end, it's going to say, you know, this passage taught us about the diverse ecosystem within the Amazon rainforest. Why do you think diversity is important within a rainforest?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
A student has the ability to understand what diversity is, but making that connection to why could it be, why should it be important? It cannot happen as this one-off, you know, how do I read between the lines? Like, how do I make the connection? How do I know, like, my classroom is diverse, so should the ecosystem of the Amazon rainforest that's nowhere near where I live and where I grow up? How, how can I make that connection? And being able to understand, like, this is how you can make the connection. Start with a sentence, you know? Because if you can't, you know, draft a coherent sentence, then you're not going to be able to do a paragraph. So to keep from teaching to the test and jumping to that, oh, read about this and write about it, let's start at the basic level of, can we orally articulate our thoughts? Or can we orally say what this sentence could be if I gave you these random words on the board?
Mm-hmm.
Like, those are small things that teachers could do about, you know, the larger content in terms of, you know, how do I make sure that I'm covering these standards without it being, you know, overly complex in their learning. And I'm looking forward to doing that coming up soon with one of the PD opportunities that I have with our POC. It's a sentence scramble, you know, and helping them to learn through the same actions in which they're going to help students to learn.
I love it. Well, this gives me so many different ideas, because I had always thought about, and you know, I'd been working on some pieces that I'm publishing in the next couple months about, you know, how everybody can exist in their area of expertise, but then also once they get, you know, you get in, you get your feet wet and you get acquainted, how can we start embedding skills that are going to impact all of those things? And I think of executive functioning, but also some of those language skills. And with the syntax, that is one thing that has a huge impact on executive functioning, because how do you use strategic self-talk for planning and self-regulation if you're not able to formulate sentences, if you're not able to understand temporal conjunctions and be able to formulate thoughts that way, or even cause and effect? Those things are all necessary, and they're all tied to syntax skills, because being able to talk through those things require those kinds of structures. So much that we could talk about here.
Absolutely.
Do you have anything? I know we're getting to the top of the hour. we've talked about a lot of things. You've mentioned some good resources and mentors. Do you have any places that, you know, you'd recommend people go to learn more about some of the information you shared, or just some things you wanted to share with people before we wrap up?
My mentor, Erica Garcia Niles, she just published her book, Hacking School Leadership, and it has been a tremendous experience to see her grow and evolve. And that's kind of where I'm drawing my influences from in terms of how I navigate this space, this learning, and this facilitation for teachers going forward. And my colleague, Stacey Roberts, she is a speech language pathologist who does the work of social engagement for parents through social media. And she has a company called Explore to Express. And she's on Instagram. And so that is literally what my days consist of: going over to see what Erica does, going over to see what Stacey is putting out, and making sense of it all, so that I can go back to being a reading specialist.
Well, thank you for sharing all that. I look forward to seeing what you do as well and your research moving forward. So hopefully we'll be linking to you sometime as well, but I will share all those things in the show notes for people.
Absolutely. And don't forget, you have that awesome resource that I have in my binder.
Thank you.
Those types of sentences starting with the passive voice, that's literally what I'm using to help my teachers in that they're learning about syntax.
Well, I'm so happy to hear that, because I originally created it for speech pathologists just because that was who was asking me for those resources, but I have definitely expanded to all of the other people who are helping kids in the schools over the last 5 years or so.
Good for the gander. It's
exactly.
All good.
Yeah. It is. Well, thank you so much for being here with me today.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for listening. Be sure to check the show notes for all the fantastic resources that Jalita shared in this interview. And also be sure to check out both Language Therapy Advanced Foundations and the School of Clinical Leadership. Language Therapy Advanced Foundations helps SLPs and other language and literacy professionals create a system for language intervention, including syntactic complexity. You can learn more about the program at drkarenspeech.com/language therapy. And then if you want to take it to the next level and think about how you can start creating initiatives that have an impact on the overall programming in your building, even if it's just for the students on your caseload initially, then check out the School of Clinical Leadership. The School of Clinical Leadership is a program that helps related service providers like speech pathologists, social workers, psychologists, counselors, special ed teachers, and other interventionists to guide their teams in supporting students' executive functioning across the day. The program helps you to both plan direct interventions as well as be an agent of change in your district. You can learn more about the program at drkarendudekbrannon.com/clinical leadership. If you have a suggestion for a guest, or if you're interested in being a guest on De Facto Leaders, send me an email at talktome@drkarenspeech.com. If you've been enjoying these episodes, please leave me a rating and review wherever you listen to your podcasts. And if you found this useful, please share it with a friend or a colleague. Thank you again for listening, and I will see you next time.
Do you want to simplify your school's technology, save teachers time, improve students' performance on state assessments without just teaching to the test? You can do it all, but don't waste another minute. Head straight to IXL.com/BE to learn how IXL's research-based teaching and learning platform can help you achieve all these goals. That's IXL.com/BE. There are lots of solutions out there for giving students what they need when they need it. But when do they actually do all of those things? You need flexible time. When added into the master schedule, flex time enables students to get extra help or intervention, meet with teachers, make up work, get physical exercise, and try new enrichment offerings. If you're thinking of giving it a try, check out My Flex Learning, which unlocks the benefits of flex time without the common challenges. Its intuitive design makes implementation and training a breeze. Make your flex time work for you. Visit myflexlearning.com/BE to learn more and receive $500 off your first year. That's myflexlearning.com/BE.